Hello and welcome to another episode of Bare Books with me, Daisy Ray.
And me, April Berry.
For those of you that don't know Bare Books, let me tell you a little bit about ourselves. We are the podcast that started in furlough back 4 years ago plus now. It was a passion project. It still is a passion project. April and I both love it dearly. We're a bit obsessed, to be fair. What we do is we review and interview indie authors, and we also write flash fiction, which we share with our listeners. And every year we bring out an anthology of all the best flash fiction that we've read out and shared over the last year. And we absolutely love it.
So we were invited to Creatives at Copper Cogs in Long Eaton, and we went along to do a evening presentation about the podcast, and particularly to get people that were at the presentation to write flash fiction. So we gave them a couple of prompts, give them a little bit of a talk about what we did, why we were there, etc., and then we just wound them up and set them off to write flash fiction. And the podcast that we're putting out today is as a result of that. But what you've got to understand is that all these people were put on the spot, had no time to prepare, and what they came up with was absolutely fantastic, considering they were all first draft stories.
Very impressive. I'm not sure how well April and I would have performed under similar circumstances, so quite relieved to be on this side of the mic for the evening.
I don't think I'd have been too bad, because I'm always lastminute.com anyway, so I possibly could have rattled something out. I'm not saying what quality it would have been, but there might have been a quantity there of between 500 and 1,000 words, which is what we asked for on the podcast. But what you're going to be listening to now is the result of those stories that were written by the participants of our presentation evening at Creatives at Copper Cogs in Long Eaton.
The level of writing on the evening was brilliant. So what you're about to listen to is what we recorded live at the time.
Are we all suitably tortured now then? So have we found it? I was talking to Philip earlier on and saying that I'm not a natural storyteller. Doesn't come easy for me at all. You know, we get round to our flash fiction episodes, and Daisy will say to me, what's your story about? And I'm like, I've not even written it yet. Let me think. An half an hour or three quarters an hour before we're due to record the podcast, I'll come up with something. And so I am a bit of a fly by the seat of my pants type of a person, lastminute.com. So it's not something that comes natural to me. So I can empathise with every single person in the room who's not found it easy tonight. But for those of you who have, really, thank you very much. So, who have we got that's happy to share? Oh, wicked, look at that. Two at the back straight away. Right, yeah. So we've got Craig as well.
Excellent.
Jeanette, are you happy to share yours?
I'm loving it. April, gird your loins, this one's about you. I've been looking forward to this, Dean.
Mine is called April Showers. The rain was incessant, but nothing would stop April from getting to the pub for some food. She hadn't had anything to eat today because she had overslept after a heavy night before and had skipped her breakfast so that she wouldn't be late for work. She reached the pub door. Inside it wasn't too full. There were plenty of places to sit down, so she found the little room she liked to sit in and dried herself off. She found a table and sat down at it. There was a menu in the centre with a piece of paper attached. She picked up the paper and read it. It announced the new way to order. Scan this QR code to download the app. Install it, register, create a profile, and order and pay for your food and drink from your table. April was delighted. The new management were bringing this pub into the 21st century. She eagerly carried out the instructions and ordered herself a real ale and a cheeseburger and chips. Then settled back to read her social media and wait for her order to arrive. After a while, she heard a voice say hello, and she saw some friends that arrived unexpectedly. She offered them to join her. They accepted and sat with her. "You order food and drink using an app now," she said. "Oh, we ordered from the bar," said her friend, "but we'd better tell them we have changed tables." The conversation flowed, and April noticed the waiter the waiters bringing food and drink to people who had arrived a long time after her. She was getting thirsty as well as hungry now. Where was her order? The final straw was when her friend's order arrived before hers. April asked the waiter what had happened to her order. The waiter said he would find out. He returned to the table 10 minutes later with a confused look on his face. "We have no record of your order, I'm afraid," he said. "But I ordered it through your app," April said, annoyed with the confusion. The waiter looked even more concerned and said, "What app?" "The one advertised here," said April, picking up the piece of paper with the QR code. "Let me get the manager," said the waiter. April was concerned now, and when the manager arrived, she explained to April the pub didn't use an app, and that what she had downloaded was a scam, and that she had better check her bank. April grabbed her coat and rushed to the bank ATM to check her account. It was as empty as her stomach.
Thank you very much, Dean. Good example of using the events of the evening.
Yes. Are you happy?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay.
Just tell everybody what your name is.
It's Debbie, and it's a what would you do? Belinda got into gardening the hard way. Growing up on a farm as a child, cultivating the veg patch and producing vegetables and fruit was a necessity, and the whole family were expected to do their bit from an early age. Grudgingly, over the spring and summer months each year, Belinda soaked up how to successfully grow edible plants. So much so, by the time she was 16, there wasn't much she didn't know. Her grandfather and father had both passed brilliant tips and shortcuts on to her, which became second nature very quickly. Each year, the village had a superb flower and vegetable show, which was eagerly anticipated by many locals, both young and old. Up until the previous year, Belinda had assisted her father, but now as she was 16, she was able to show on her own merit. A lot of people knew of her expertise, as she was often consulted on gardening problems and conundrums. She was expected to win several cups. The neighbouring farmer, Mr. Wilton, however, was not impressed. How could a mere slip of a girl even pretend to know how to grow prize-winning produce? Mr. Wilton was a bitter man. He had no time for niceties and would generally shun people he met in the village. Belinda had found out through Mrs. Dalrymple at the grocery shop that Mr. Wilton had lost his family many years ago. An errant lorry driver lost control of his vehicle on a particularly nasty bend and crashed into an oncoming car, driven by Mr. Wilton's wife. His only son, James, aged 8 years old, perished along with his mum. Mr. Wilton never got over the tragedy. It ate into him, and only hate and unhappiness emanated from him after that. The flower and vegetable show organisers had asked Mr. Wilton to be a judge this year. Anyone over 60 who had entered specimens in previous shows automatically became judges. The big day came round very quickly. Belinda had spent several weeks tending and nurturing certain runner bean pods, guiding her dahlias not to flower too soon, and hoping that three of her carrots were indeed the longest ever. All the entries were laid out neatly on white cloth-covered tables. The smell and scent of all the exhibits was fresh and heady in the marquee. The judges, of which there were four, duly did their bit, examining each specimen very carefully, knowing how much it meant to the competitors. After a very long 45 minutes, everyone was allowed back in to see the results. Belinda was shocked to see that none of her items were even in the running. As she looked at her beans, dahlias and carrots, she realised that they'd been tampered with. The beans' outer layer was scratched, some of the dahlia petals had been pulled out, and the wonderfully long tendril-like roots of her carrots had been snapped off. She looked round in dismay and noticed Mr. Wilton talking to his nephew, who had walked away with most categories. Belinda knew very well that her entries were much better, but obviously Uncle had other plans. Belinda could easily have put in an appeal, but she had no proof. She decided that although she was upset, it just wasn't worth the trouble. There would always be next year. What would you do?
Thank you. Thank you very much. I am amazed how you can create these stories in a busy pub. Anybody else happy to share? Shall I pick on somebody, Craig? Oh, sorry. We've got Craig Deegan. I'm currently reading The Beginning of Dorcas.
Oh, excellent.
So what got you into writing?
Good question. Well, I got into writing because I beta read for people.
Okay.
And I kind of sort of thought, well, you know, I was reading beta reading for a number of people and thinking, could I do this? And I sort of thought, nah, I can't do this. Not a chance. And then I entered a short flash fiction competition.
Okay.
And I got it published, which to my amazement. And that was the first time Mr. Binks appeared at Twillington House. It's a lot different from what's in the books, but so I sort of went from there and I did a couple more, and then I suddenly thought, you know, it was May 2019 after meeting one of the authors that I beta read for, and he said, oh, just get on with it, you know, crack on with it, because I've got this idea. And he said, you know, just bang it all down on the page, and then once you've got it all down, then you can start fiddling about with it. And that's really what led to, well, what became books one and two, because I wrote this huge 200,000 word plus opus. So yeah, it's that's really what got me into writing, was thinking, can I do what these other guys are doing? Because I've always sort of thought a lot about authors and thinking, you know, these guys are great, how do they do this sort of thing? So to actually do it yourself, it was a bit of a surprise, really.
But you did. I have a quick question. How do you name some of the characters? I'm thinking about Jenny Greenteeth.
Well, Jenny Greenteeth's actually a Yorkshire legend. So she.
Oh, for real?
Oh, yeah, she's for real. Oh, yeah. Okay. She is a...
Scary.
Yeah, she is was renowned for dragging children and old people into rivers and eating them, basically. So, yeah, a lot of them are, through the books, are based on fact. There's Jack in Irons, which is in book four, who, again, is a Yorkshire giant clad in chains. But actually naming them is, they just pop up there. I mean, Dorcas is named actually after a Enid Blyton book of the famous five, where they go to a farmhouse and it's Dorcas, the farmer's wife, who looks after them. And that's...
Love the famous five and the secret seven.
Yep.
Yeah. I think we like a lot of the same books.
I think we do.
Yeah, we definitely have that in common.
Okay, this sort of sits between two categories of either deviation or what would you do. It's a little bit dark. I love him, Mum, came the wail again, and he still said no, even now. Maybe she thought she did. She'd certainly spent enough time on the damn Valentine's card, sticking all those little hearts to the front and insisting on two trips to the craft shop for bits. Results were impressive, I had to give her that. I'd have been thrilled if it had dropped through my letterbox. The object of her affection, not so much. And when she asked him about it at school, about the cards he'd had, he dismissed her with a shrug. Ignored the strange girl, the bullied girl. He only had eyes for Mandy Lowe. Well, eyes for a massive chest, an easy manner in showing it off. Teenage boys and their little brains. She'd been upset. Distraught. A call from the school nurse had me picking her up early from the office. She'd sobbed all the way home. I couldn't have that. You do anything for your kids, don't you? Whatever was necessary to make them happy. That's what you do when you're a parent. You love them and you make things right. It had been easy enough. February evenings are lighter, but the darkness still draws in early. She knew where he lived, and football practice went on until 5:30. It was just a question of waiting for him to be almost home. A bit of luck, a bag of spilt shopping, him a good, helpful boy. The needle went in just fine. I strained my back getting him into the boot of the car. Thankfully, she was more than willing to help me get him out. He'd been wide-eyed and teary when he woke up in the chair. The special chair, the one that Daddy had left down in the cellar, in the secret room. I left her with him to talk. I'd be upstairs to help if she needed me to. She wanted to declare her love. Young love, the purest kind. I smiled when I thought about my own teenage heart. A handsome boy, but a naughty one. Wandering hands and wandering eyes. I still have them. Daddy showed me how. She has those same eyes, the darkest brown, so brown they're almost black. The cellar door banged and she came in. Her cheeks were flushed and wet. I raised an eyebrow. He said yes, but he meant no. I could see it, Mum. He doesn't want a weirdo like me. What do you want to do? If I can't have him, nobody can, especially that slut Mandy, she spat. I placed a syringe on the table and she picked it up. Are you sure? Yes. The river is high at this time of year. Accidents happen. I have painkillers for my back. Was it right? Absolutely. You protect the ones you love. You put things right. Daddy raised me well and I'm raising her the same way. And the rules and the laws be damned.
Well, thank you very much. You were right about Doc.
Anybody else happy to share?
Trace Spencer. And this is called Walking Back to Happiness. Physio started 30th of Feb, the day before Valentine's. I remember because the year previous, Astrid and I had been married. A year on, Astrid was dead. Our car had rolled at speed into the middle barrier on the M1. I'd lay on the grass, verge unconscious. As our car burnt itself out, Astrid was gone. I had no idea. In a coma, 12 weeks, 3 days, 1 hour since the accident. I come round, hearing beeps and whistles as machines pumped at my heart, keeping it going. Eyes open, but trying to speak wasn't an option. A year on, I speak with a lisp, a scar across my forehead, 3 inches long. My weight, 3 stone plus lighter. Movement and my legs getting better, but the pain of loss, that pain carried on. I breathed heavily, daily. Not because my lungs were damaged by the accident, but because my heart was breaking in my loss of Astrid. Weekly, I'd exercise, do physio on my legs, speak to a counsellor, the grief spilling out of me, pain overwhelming. My kids, our kids, the kids Astrid gave me, our twins, Beth and Maisie, just turned 11, kept me afloat, living for our girls, but no matter how much love I got from our twins, it barely touched my broken heart. It's a different love, innocent, open love, in the shape of unicorns, teddy bears, rainbows and flowers. The love I shared with Astrid kept me focused, moved me on, gave me strength, but now that strength seemed to have gone. I tried to walk for my girls, not myself. I'd nothing left for me, but the girls needed their mum. They needed me to keep going. They needed a mum and dad. No matter how much pain, grief I felt, but what I did know, what did I know about ribbons, hairstyles, feminine stuff, giving two little girls motherly love? One day, Maisie came to me crying, complaining about pain in her tummy, a sister holding her close. Beth told me, Maisie's bleeding down there. She nodded downwards. I screwed up my face, confused. It's my period, Dad, it started. I gasped, awake. What did I know about periods? I'd not expected this, but Beth left Maisie and I in the kitchen. She came back with a pack of sanitary pads and took her sister quickly upstairs to her room to appease the pain and help her. Meanwhile, I'm thinking, what would Astrid do? Suddenly I saw Astrid just sitting there with a towel, pink cerise towel, wrapped around a hot water bottle on her tummy. The idea came to me. I stumbled to the bathroom downstairs where Astrid had kept the towel. Opening the cupboard under the bathroom sink, I fumbled around for Astrid's hot water bottle, found it. Making my way steadily towards the kitchen, I filled the kettle with tap water, boiled it up, and as soon as it had boiled, I took the kettle from the stove, twisted off the lid of the hot water bottle, filled it. Then I tried to make my way upstairs. One step, two step, three step, four, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I managed to get upstairs okay. I turned to Maisie's room. I'm coming, girls. I've got an hot water bottle for your tummy, Maisie. The bedroom door opened. Beth stood before me. Maisie sat on a bed, tears wet in her cheeks. It's okay. Dad's here. It'll be okay. You'll be okay. A few steps more. I gave Daisy a mum's hot water bottle wrapped in that pretty cerise hand towel. Maisie held it to her tummy. The heat easing her pain away. I held my girls close. I'd taken the first step back to finding some normality. Not walking back to happiness, but with my girls, I might find it.
Thank you, Rosie.
Thank you.
No subject is off the table. No. Not going to disturb the flow. That's one flow going on there.
Yeah.
Stephanie Noble, walking back to happiness. She was always someone to depend on. Someone's granddaughter, someone's child, someone's wife, and then someone's mother. She used to have hopes and dreams and opinions. She used to be an extrovert, singing and dancing in the streets, until the comments of, walk properly and stop showing off, soon killed that. She used to dance all night in the clubs, letting herself go, until age put paid to that. Her dress sense expressed individuality, until dressing sensible became the norm. Having worked hard to retain the figure, but not wanting to dress like mutton dressed as lamb, kept cropping up in her thoughts. She went to school, tried hard, and tried to stay out of trouble, and not become too distracted by the boys. Entering the big wide world of work, and trying to mix work and play in equal measure, expanding her social circle. Ticked all the boxes of meeting Mr. Wright, planning a future with a ring and a mortgage, and then floated down the aisle, smiling it away at family and friends. The decision of having the holidays and improving the house and having fun before children gave way to life's biological clock ticking away in the background, turned thoughts into planning for the patter of tiny feet and sleepless nights. Little did she know that being the most important person in the world would soon give way to being on the sidelines once the baby was born. Not that she minded, of course. It was what she'd always wanted. But it was still a bit of a shock for everyone's attention to switch so suddenly. She was an extra in a play and no longer the leading lady. The nappies and the sleepless nights were worthwhile for all the love and the devotion every time the little face lit up when it saw her. Her life was no longer felt like hers own, but she didn't mind. Watching her baby grow and learn and becoming an adult that she was proud to call her child. Then she felt less needed, less wanted, and less able to give an opinion. This is what she wanted, an independent adult. So why did she feel so redundant? With no prior warning and no thanks, feeling only required for the problem solving, money lending, and not the good stuff. She missed that little hand to hold, and all the news, good and bad, was relayed to her on a daily basis, no longer. Then the child moved away, with no more washing to do and no more nagging to tidy that bedroom, just waiting for the odd call or text convincing her that all was well and she wouldn't, or otherwise she would have heard. But what of the husband? Was the magic still there, BC, before children? Or were they just bumping along, missing their role in life of parenthood? No more day trips to children's theme parks, and no more days out pleasing everyone. She was reaching middle age. She was well aware of that, thank you very much, and all of her friends were becoming grandparents. Don't worry, they said. It'll soon be your turn soon. Then one day, without warning, a light bulb moment came to her. She was over halfway through her life, maybe even two-thirds, and she realised, as a child, she had made her own happiness, and it was time to recreate it for herself again. So she brought the expressive outfits, joined glasses to express her inner dance goddess, and realised, after decades of being the person everyone expected her to be, she now walked her own path of happiness, and led the life she knew, at this time, that this was the version of her that she was meant to be.
Relatable.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. How are we doing?
All right. We're just having a chat about writing, because Sally's talking about where to start and wants some tips and hints and things. So,
do you write anything at all yet?
No,
not yet.
No.
Never say never, though.
These two are being really helpful.
So, best hint and tip for a brand new writer, Jeanette Taylor Porter.
Oh, you mean thing. I think when I started writing, obviously I didn't just suddenly decide I was going to write a book. I started writing with flash fiction.
Okay.
And I took something really ordinary, like a seat. It was called The Seat. Right, and I imagined a seat in a garden, like you go round at Elverston or somewhere like that, imagined what this seat would have seen and heard over the time that it was there. And it was really quite interesting because it would have been there a long time and it would have seen changes of fashion, it would have seen lovers, it would have seen arguments, it would have seen families and all this kind of thing. And I wove it into a short story. But much later on, that story, The Seat, became the inspiration for a book that I wrote called Aunt Bee's Legacy, which started off a series of crime sort of... I have great difficulty in explaining what sort of books they are, but they're
readable.
Sort of...
They're very readable.
But that's the thing, when you get started on a small idea and you don't really think about writing a book about a seat, but much later on, something simple like that becomes an inspiration. I mean, this story that I, because I've cheated tonight, this is a story I wrote quite a long time ago, because I thought it had to be less than 500 words, I condensed it a lot.
So is it over 500 now?
Well, no.
But it will be, right?
the original is over 500. But
excellent. One from Jeanette Taylor Ford now.
This is for Craig.
Because he hates romances. As Tom sat listening to the speeches, his mind wandered back many years to the first time he asked a girl to marry him. They were 10 years old and in the same class at school. He remembered the panache with which he tried to persuade her. If you don't marry me, I'll hit you over the head. He cringed now, thinking about it. Her name was Janet, and she was a tiny little thing, pale with blue eyes, and he really liked her. She quietly replied she was too young to get married. Of course, he dealt with the refusal like a man. He went off and played with a car. Not long after that incident, his family moved away from the area and Janet was lost to him. He grew up and worked on the North Sea oil rigs, living with men doing a tough job. Tom loved the life until he met this delectable girl who now sat beside him. To be with her, he'd taken a job on land. He'd met her on the beach. She dropped her ice cream on him as she was picking her way across the sands with the fast-melting cones she'd brought for herself and her friend. He'd woken with a jump at the sudden coldness, and they both exclaimed at the same time, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, dear, my lovely ice cream." "It's there if you want to lick it off, love," he grinned. Then they both laughed. He did so much better the next time he made a proposal of marriage. On a beautiful summer evening, they sat on the beach with a posh picnic in a hamper, which he laid out on a cloth spread on the sand. She'd looked delectable in a long and flowing blue dress, highlighting her ethereal beauty. After checking no one was looking, he got down on one knee, held her hand and bowed his love for her, and asked her to marry him. With a delighted laugh, she said, "Yes," and threw her arms around his neck and kissed him thoroughly. He loved her spontaneity and lack of pretense. Now he reached out and gripped her hand, and she looked at him lovingly. She looked amazing in her wedding gown, although it was a simple dress, cut in such a way that it accentuated her perfect figure. The neckline was a V, in which sat a single teardrop pearl necklace. She was the adornment of the dress. He knew he was the luckiest man in the world. She was as lovely inside as she was on the outside. He was a lucky man. He could hardly believe he'd found her. She leaned towards him and whispered in his ear, "It's just as well you brushed up on your proposal technique. If you had threatened to hit me over the head this time, I would definitely have said no." And they bent their heads towards each other and quietly giggled.
Thank you. And what's your name?
Catherine Scullin.
And what's your name?
Edwina Lambourtière. She's been trying to get me to write more of them.
She comes up with a lot of good ideas, which is...
It's one of those, is it?
Guilty.
So, what subject have you both chosen?
I don't know.
You do?
Deviation?
Deviation.
Talking about clocks.
Yeah. Talking about
clocks.
Clocks. Okay.
Seeing where it goes.
Yeah.
When we have writing afternoons at her house, it goes so much better. But I think it's just the pressure of being
here. Yeah. Don't expect too much of yourselves. You
don't have
to finish it today.
Yeah.
You can still share a part finished thing and then finish it off and send it in once you've finished it. That's absolutely fine. You don't have to do it all today.
Yeah, I'll definitely do that. No, I don't think I've ever written flash fiction before. Not a complete story arc.
Yeah.
Because I'm not very good at being brief. That's not my forte.
Do you like your words?
Yes. Yes, I do. Yeah.
I'm also on the lengthy side.
The lengthy side, yeah.
When it gets written, it's on the lengthy side. Otherwise, it stays around, yes. Like, what?
Yeah.
Five lines of just a prompt and a very interesting idea.
She's got a lot of titles for great concepts of books.
I'm trying to get her to write my books.
I see. So, want to be a ghostwriter?
No, I want to write. I want to get my own stuff published one day. So, novels. I'm currently seeking traditional publishing first before I go down self-publishing route. So I'm just putting out lots of letters, trying to get a literary agent in a really competitive market, but I'm going to try that first.
What's your Bear Books?
Bear Books. B-A-R-E. Bear Books.
I'll definitely check that out. And are you on Spotify?
Yes. Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, everywhere.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Thank you. Oh, it's warm in here.
I think someone asked for meat.
What?
Unless I misheard, you know, it could have been meat.
Yeah, there's a start to a story. Yeah. Wanted he got meat. I think that might have to come under deviation. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm really pleased that you've both come this evening.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, excellent. I'll let you write. I'll stop interrupting you.
Deviation. Time is quite pressing when you're running for the bus or waiting for a souffle to rise. It's also pressing when you're the getaway driver for a robbery. This wasn't a high-stakes robbery, though, like a bank vault or a mansion. Rather, we were robbing a library, because, frankly, £10 for a paperback was getting silly. Books are heavy, so preparations included making sure the suspension on my getaway vehicle was adequate and instructing my accomplices to avoid the weighty hardbacks like the plague. It was the middle of the robbery, and I was sat in my Ford Fiesta, trying not to look too anxious, straining to hear any thievery-like sounds from the library. All of a sudden, there was a rap at my window. "Excuse me," came the voice of an elderly gentleman. "Could you help me?" I said, checking my watch. "Maybe. What's up?" "I've lost my library card. Could you help me look around for it?" According to my watch, there was 10 minutes remaining until my accomplices would meet me. "Oh, all right then," I said, "as long as it's quick." We started walking down the road, scouring the ground. "Retracing your steps?" I asked. "Yep," he said, walking into the Red Lion. "To the pub?" I asked. "Yep," he said again. "Oh, makes sense," I said. "We can ask if anything's been given into lost property." I walked up to the counter, opened my mouth, but then my companion cut across me. "Want a pint?" he asked. "Excuse me, a pint?" "She'll have a pint," he said firmly. After a few minutes of trying to get the attention of an unusually busy bartender, it was time I needed to be back, and with 3/4 of a pint left, I slapped my legs. "Right," I said, "I better be going. Sorry about your library card. I'm sure it'll show up." "Aye," he said. I walked to the window and suddenly my face was lit up by flashing blue lights, and so I promptly turned on my heel. "Actually," I said, "I think I'll finish that pint."
Wicked, thank you.
So it's what would you do? The bloody knife fell on the floor with a sinister sound. It was the first mistake. This was going to add a further half an hour to the cleaning. Bloody hell. Kathy murdered to herself. At 62, they were already trying to get her to retire, and she had been maintaining a high standard of as a slogan for hire until today. The son of the deceased was due to arrive in an hour, and she was supposed to have vacated the location. I can't believe I dropped it, she said, pulling out the cleaning supplies. As she kneeled to start scrubbing the drop of blood, a car pulled in the driveway. Her eyebrows frowned as she checked the time. What now? The cut hand of the victim was still visible from the trash bag, and there was no way she'd be able to reach and hide it before the impromptu visitor entered the kitchen. So much for a single disappearance act. She retrieved the blood from the plastic bag she had just put it in and whispered, I suppose I don't really have a choice. The door opened, and before she could lunge, she got pulled back, a cord tightening around her neck. The knife dropped again. Distraction, she thought. I suppose that's one way to retire. She kicked her assailant with her elbow as a familiar face appeared in front of the door. Mark. I'm sorry, Kathy. Company policy. He raised his gun, and right when he pulled the trigger, she ducked, making her assailant the unfortunate victim of the first shot. A second bullet, though, got lodged in her shoulder. There's no sun coming in, eh? She thought as she grabbed the knife and threw it towards Mark. She never missed, in normal circumstances. However, an injured shoulder was quite a debilitating factor. Mark laughed. Why did you even have to take this job? Well, the payment was supposed to cover for my flight to France, where I had planned to disappear. I suppose I have to change my plan now. Her sassy answer took Mark by surprise. She had a plan B. Well, she always had a plan B. Did you think my age had made me naive or slow? Using her now dead assailant, she pushed through to Mark, got to the sink where she had taped her own gun. Before he knew it, the barrel was against his chest. If France was calling you, Mark, what would you do? She pulled the trigger and started packing. Never mind the knife, they'll clean their own mess.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, and thank you for everyone that stood up and shared. It's not easy to do in a room full of people, especially when you don't know each other and or you're not a writer normally. So I think it's amazing that you've all participated. We're dead proud of everybody. Not sure I'd want to do it. Yeah, but I'm on this side. And thank you for coming to see us and for participating. Fully appreciate every one of you. Thank you.
Yes, thanks everybody.
Well, there we go. All of the stories from our evening at Creatives at Copper Cogs. And I've got to say that there were a couple of there that were quite standout for me. I'm not going to name which ones they were because I'm not going to play favourites, but I thoroughly enjoyed that evening. Our next out and about is one to look out for.
Indeed. So at the end of June, there is a one-day festival in Nottingham at Nottingham Central Library, and it's called Queer the Shelves. And we are the podcast of choice for the day, so April and I will be there with our kit, and we will be taking sound recordings from the panels of the day, and we will also be doing one-on-one on-the-spot interviews with some of the authors on the day, and we will then be putting out a 6-episode special this summer, especially for Queer the Shelves. Really looking forward to it. It's going to be so exciting.
So yeah, so look out for the dates of when those podcasts are going to be released. Facebook, Instagram and Twitter will let you know well in advance. And I know it's going to be well worth a listen. I'm looking forward to interviewing the authors. I'm looking forward to looking at what new stuff's coming out and about in the world of writing. I believe we've got novels, we've got poems. I am really, really looking forward to picking up some new indie authors to maybe interrogate on the next season of Bear Books Podcast.
I agree completely. Well, I think we're going to be on a learning curve and we're going to get as much out of it, even though it's a working day for us, as everyone else that's buying a ticket. And I have to say that at this moment in time, I think approximately 70% of the tickets have sold. So if you look up Queer the Shelves on Facebook, there is a link there for you to buy a ticket for the day. So don't miss out. Get them early so that you don't miss a brilliant day. One last thing before we go, just to let everybody know, all those brilliant indie authors out there, that submissions are now open for the podcast. So what we require from you, if you want to be considered for next season, is the first three chapters of your new novel. Send them to us via email at bearbookspod1@gmail.com and we will let you know if you make the next round and invite you onto the podcast. We've received quite a few already and some excellent writing. I am so chuffed. Thank you so much for everyone that's already sent us an email.
So I think that's it. That all we have to do now is say goodbye. Take care of yourselves.
Take care of each other and we'll see you in the summer.
Thank you for joining us. Now you've had a listen, why not pop over and join us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter.
And if you want to send in your flash fiction submissions, you just need to email us at bearbookspod1@gmail.com. And now that you're part of the Bear Books family, why not share us with all the bookworms and creatives in your life?